me introduce everyone to Rebecca Liston. Rebecca is celebrating 10 years as a highly successful homeopathic physician. In developing her practice, Rebecca has been able to identify a step-by-step process, the very one she used to make her own practice profitable. Today, Rebecca has been successfully helping other health and wellness professionals serve their clients brilliantly, market effectively, and make more money doing what they love to do. Rebecca brings a unique blend of personal experience, humor, creativity, and passion to her coaching practice. And today, we're very pleased that Rebecca has agreed to share some of her insight and wisdom with our members. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you, Beth. I really appreciate that introduction. That was lovely. Thank you so much. I'm really glad to have an opportunity to chat with you today and just to sort of give a little bit of a, well, the whole point, really, when you and I spoke about doing this is, like, let's get some information out there to your membership because it's information that they can use and they can take away and hopefully will help get the ball rolling for them.
That's great. So let's start. When you do business coaching, Rebecca, what's the single ongoing mistake that you see that practitioners are making?
Well, you know, I think I better interject even before I answer that question, just as a little, you know, sometimes I have, like, when I do a workshop, I have a little warning. So I should say I do tend to be really blunt. So I'm going to answer your questions very honestly and very bluntly, and I might even curse and swear a little bit as I get a little bit passionate about what we're talking about. So when I say I'm going to reply to that, and I don't want anyone to take offense, but this is the truth. I'm going to answer you very truthfully to what I see as the biggest mistake. And the biggest mistake that I see in our industry, in the health and wellness profession in particular, is a sense that the practice doesn't need to be treated like a business. The idea that we can just hang out our shingle and sort of sit in our treatment room and hold our crystals and the people will come. There is a lot of value to manifestation. I'm a huge believer in vision boards. I do a lot of intuitive work myself. I do, you know, a lot of work with my crystals and I help, and it helps me in my business tremendously. But at the end of the day, you have to work to build a practice. It takes work. It takes a plan. You have to treat your practice like it's a business. You have to know the money aspect of what's happening in the business. You have to have a marketing plan. It's just not as easy as just putting a sign on the door, you know, as I say, sort of hanging out your shingle and letting and just watching it all happen. It's not that simple. So to me, that's the biggest mistake, is that we graduate or we take a course and we come away thinking, well, we want to heal the world. And that is wonderful. Don't get me wrong. But it's not going to happen if you don't put some action behind what you say you want.
Right. So on the flip side of that, would you say that there is a single most important secret to having a successful business?
A single one. If I could pick a single one. I'm not sure I could pick a single one, so I'll pick instead. I'll answer and say the single most important secret, I think, is to have a plan. But having a plan, I would say there's several plans you need. You need a money plan. Right? So you need a plan for, which is, you know, the B word, budget. You need a budget for your business, right? And the key to having a good, effective budget for your business is that you need to have some sort of capital investment or an initial investment into your business. You can't just graduate and go and think you're not going to spend any money to make money. You've got to spend money to make money. There's not a single business on this planet that started without money. So you've got to start somewhere. You've got to get a loan from grandpa. You've got to sell an RSP. You've got to cash out something. You've got to quit getting cable. Whatever it is, you've got to have some money to put into the business. So you need to have a money plan. The second plan that you need to have is a really good working schedule for your time. Right? It means, you know, being clear about your boundaries in terms of when you work, when you see patients and when you don't, and when you're going to market your business. And then the third plan that's most important is a marketing plan. So you have to know how you're going to go and attract clients. How are you going to even let people know that you're out there? You've got an incredible skill set, but if nobody knows, how can you provide the service that you so deeply want to provide?
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of an ABC answer to the number one thing you need is a plan.
Right. That's really good, though. And so I take it from that you really put a lot of importance on the building of a brand.
I think building a brand is very important. However, I don't think it's the single most important step. I think the most important step in starting out the practice is to develop what, depending on what you read and what phrase you want to use, I'll use the phrase ideal client. An ideal client profile is imperative. And what that means is it means that you have to decide who it is you really want to serve the most. So we come out again, we graduate, and I've been there. This is my story, so it's not like I'm not speaking negatively. This is the reality. We graduate, and we really want to help everybody. But at the end of the day, from a marketing of a business perspective, you really need to be specific about who you want to help so that you know how to market and even what sort of brand to develop, right? For example, if you decided that you really want to help pregnant women, your branding or the images that you use, the logo, the colors you use, is going to be entirely different than if you decided you wanted to help men with prostate cancer, right? You're going to use different colors, different fonts for your website, all of that. So when it comes to branding, you can't brand a business unless you know who you're trying to attract.
Do you have any advice around that, around deciding how to define your target market?
I do. I have a lot of advice around that because this is the one step that can't be skipped. So with everyone that I coach and even with the online course that I offer, it's not the first step in the online course, but it's the first step before we can talk about building the practice beyond, you know, budgeting and those things that I talked about earlier. When it comes to deciding your ideal client, there's a couple of different ways that you can do that. And let me just back up a little bit and define what that means. Ideal client means those are the people that you want to work with or we want to help the most. So people often struggle with this, right? Because, again, they think, well, I want to help everyone. But believe me when I say that you actually can't. It is important to develop an idea of who you want to work with the most so you become very, very good at working with a particular either disease condition or a particular type of person or a particular, you know, like pregnant women, for example, like a, you know, that's not a disease state, so you know what I mean, like a life stage, right? You know, maybe you want to work with menopausal women or you want to classify your ideal client based on the disease that they've got, so it could be prostate cancer as an example. But what you want to do then is become very, very good at working with that particular person because you're excited about it and it feeds your soul and you're passionate about it, and that helps build your credibility in an industry that is actually, let's face it, we're not just handed credibility in our industry in North America, right? We don't have instant credibility when we graduate. It's not the reality. So we have a responsibility to continue to educate the public and to build our own credibility. It's the only thing we can do. And the one way to do that is to become very, very good at working with a particular subset of people. So one way that you can determine, you know, who your ideal client might be is to ask yourself, you know, who do you love to work with? You know, what I always, my favorite saying is, you know, what floats your boat, right? What makes your heart sing? You know, and if you've already had some clients or you've done some practicum work, you know, as you've been, you know, working through doing practice cases through your studies, sometimes you have a good of a feeling, right? Because you've already maybe worked with 10, 15, 20 people, and you might think to yourself, oh, God, I worked with that Betty Ann, and she was pregnant, and she was god-awful, and I hated working with her, and she was so, you know, annoying, and she called me all the time, and I couldn't stand it. You know, or the flip side might be, oh, I worked with that Betty Ann when she was pregnant, and I just loved working with her, because I got to talk to her about her prenatal health, and that's really what I'm so passionate about, because, you know, I've had my own babies, and it was so important to me, and that's what even got me into studying nutrition to begin with. You see the difference?
What we find is people pick their target market based on their own personal experience, something that they have been able to live themselves.
That's another way to go. So that's another method of getting at your ideal client is to say to yourself, well, what prompted me to step into this industry to begin with? So, for example, you know, did I watch my mother die at the age of 52 from breast cancer, and it's been such a pivotal moment in my life that I knew that I could have helped her if I'd known more about food and nutrition, so I went and studied that. And so now I don't want any other woman to ever lose her mother at the age of 52 to something like preventable like breast cancer, right? So it could be that. So it could be a family member. It could be yourself. You might have decided to study nutrition because you got help from a nutritionist to help with your IBS or your Crohn's or colitis. And so then you go, wow, you know, it really helped me. So now I'm going to study nutrition, and I'm going to therefore then help others. When you choose a target market or an ideal client or whatever phrase you want to use, that is based around something you yourself have experienced either personally or in your life, you bring so much value to the clients that you serve because you bring your experience and you bring a knowing. You bring a camaraderie right out of the hop, right? It's not that you sit and tell every client your entire life story, but it's going to come through. You know, because you've had that experience, you can nod, you can smile, you understand, right? And you already have all of the life lessons that go around that particular, either, again, stage of life or disease condition or whatever. You've got some knowledge there already, and that's very valuable.
That's really helpful. I think it's a big thing when people are just starting out that they, I think many have that same feeling that you spoke about, oh, I can help everybody, and I just need to get some business going, and I'll take anything. And like,
yeah,
say,
I'll take anyone with a heartbeat and a checkbook, right?
Exactly. Well said. Going back to what you said before about, you know, you can't just make a business work by hanging your shingle and opening your door. How would you suggest that someone starting out would structure a typical day such that the business gets the attention that it requires for success, and it's therefore not simply a hobby that's taking up time?
What a great question. So you remember when one of the questions you asked me was what was the single biggest secret? And I said it's a plan, and you need three plans. And I said you need a money plan, a marketing plan, and you need a time plan. So this delves right into the time plan that you need. So the magic rule that I was taught by my coach years ago when I was first, you know, started working with a business coach and actually finally started making some money, seeing some clients, it was a miracle. What we worked with was this, I hate to admit it because I'm not really, I love numbers when they work for me, but I'm not inherently a numbers person, but believe it or not, business really does come down to mathematics a lot. So this is but one place where math really comes into play. So what you need to do is you need to sit down and you need to take a really good look at your calendar. And I would recommend that you sort of do it on a weekly basis and you write down, you know, what hours you want to work. Now, that means work, whether that means with a client or on the business side, working on your business and in your business. So if you have children, for example, and you drop them off at school and you don't want to work until 9:15, write it down, right? And you want to pick them up at 3:30, so you've got to be done by 3. Great. Those are now your hours of operation, right? You need to create that, and you've got to write that in stone, right? This is not a case where somebody calls you up and they say that you want to see you at 8 o'clock at night, and you're like, well, usually I'm in bed by 8 o'clock, but okay, I'll take you. Nope, not anymore, you don't, right? You clearly have a work schedule, so set up your hours of operation, whatever it is, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I don't care. Whatever it is, sit down and figure it out. Now, I will say sometimes people will do this on a 2-week rotation, especially I'll mention this because a lot of people who are listening to this may have small children, and their 2-week rotation because sometimes the school, the days that the kids are in school are different when they're in kindergarten. So you might want to do this in a 2-week block, but if every week looks pretty much the same, then you can do it in a 1-week block, but if you've got some difference in when you work based on your kids in school, then you can do it in a 2-week block, but the math is the same. So you sit down, you write down your schedule, and then you do mathematics, and you figure out how many hours do I work? And you make sure you leave room for your lunch break and time to go pee and whatever, right? How many hours do I work? So let's say, for ease of math, we're going to pretend you work 10 hours because I have to keep the numbers really simple. When you first start your business and you're working, let's say, 10 hours a week, the golden rule of thumb is that 80% of that time is spent working on the business, on growing the business, on marketing your business. And 20% of that time you're working in it with clients. Because really in the beginning you don't have a lot of clients, right? You're just starting out. So 20% of that time is actually going to be, frankly, quite a lot, really, probably in the beginning, let's be honest, right? So in that example of working 10 hours a week, 8 hours of that time is spent doing the work of running the business and marketing and getting out there and drumming up business and working at it. And 2 hours a week will be with patients, clients, whatever you'd like to call them. Then You do that. So that happens for every single week. Every week, that's going to be your division, right? So if somebody called you in the first week of the month and you only have 2 hours to see patients and you're already booked, you don't book them in the first week of the month because your 2 hours of patients are already booked. You book them into week two when you've got time available for those 2 hours of patient work, right? Do you see where I'm going? It's non-negotiable. You're hard-nosed about your schedule. I'm not really a hard ass, but to be honest with you, if it weren't for these rules and the things that I've come up with, I would not have any business whatsoever because I'm a complete wing-ding when it comes to time. And so I've had to put these parameters into place. It's what keeps me on track. So it's not that this comes naturally to me, by the way. It's just because I had to put it into place. It keeps me in line, frankly.
We often hear from our members that they don't have the time to read our newsletters or blog or pursue the other information that we provide that's really helpful. And so what you're saying is that is the important stuff that should fit into the 80% of their time.
You got it. Because, frankly, okay. I don't know how I'm going to be really blunt. How could they not have the time to be looking at resources and trying to build a practice? I would question them, what the hell are they doing then?
Good point.
And I'll tell you what it is they're not working on the business. This is a fundamental error. So I'll just kind of finish this off with the ratio and the 80%, 20% thing, just so I can kind of complete the example. Because some of the members who are going to be listening will already have 20% of their time will already be filled with clients every week, right? So it's not until you are consistently full with 20% of your time dedicated to client work consistently, every month, consistently, that you start to switch the ratio and you start it very slowly. So you go from a 20-80 split to 25% of your time with patients and 75% working on the business. And then once that's consistent, after several months in a row, proven, you are definitely flying, then you can continue to switch the ratio. My advice is that you should never, ever spend less than 60% of the time working on the business and 40% in the business. If you want to dip to a 50-50 split, you can, but I'll tell you, if you're not continuing to put more energy into building it, then you will lose business. So if you want that ratio to shift, go ahead. But I promise you, you will see a decline in the people that you're attracting, and you will end up with less business down the road. You have to continually be putting effort in. So even at my busiest, Beth, and people are always shocked by this, so I'm going to say it. Even at my busiest, with I have a full homeopathic practice, right, a very busy coaching business, I still only spend 3 days out of five, right? I'm over the top. I'm over the ratio. If you look on my because I'm 3 days out of five with patients or with clients, is actually tipping the ratio, right? So I'm actually 60% of my time with clients, and this is not what I would recommend. But I take the fourth week of every month, and I don't see patients at all. So over the course of my month, I'm still up working more on the business than in the business. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does, and coming from a business background, you see this all the time where people are so busy with their, putting out their business that they don't have time to do the marketing, and then when that business is finished or dies down, it's too late for them to be marketing to build new clients.
Then they're scrambling, and you know what scrambling means? Scrambling means you're broke. Right? Scrambling means you've got no money coming in, right? You've been really busy, 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 and you're making all this money. And you're like, oh, this is wonderful. Well, guess what happens 3 months after that? You're piss-ass broke.
Right. You have to keep building.
That's the reality. That's the reality. Yeah. You have to keep putting it in. And, there's a lot of, and again, I just use myself as an example because people are always astonished. But, I follow the rule myself because I know. I wouldn't have done what I've done if I didn't follow that rule.
Well, that's really interesting, and I think it's right on the money. No pun intended. In terms of networking, which is a really big part of, our business, a lot of it's word of mouth and that sort of thing, and it's really important for members, but the members that are newer to the business, in other words, they don't really have a built network. How do you recommend that they start with that? Like, who might they target and where could they get openers and that sort of thing?
Well, I think, again, it comes back to that sort of deciding who they want to work with. And then the best way, in my opinion, to start drumming up some business from a networking perspective is to remember that every social interaction that you have, even, is a networking opportunity. So if you've determined that you want to work with pregnant women, for example, then, you know, when you're at the soccer field cheering for your kid and the woman next to you is pregnant, right, that's a, believe it or not, it's a networking opportunity, right? I think it's, you know, I think it's important to start where you're comfortable, and the best place for that is to start with people that you already kind of know, that you've already got even a little bit of a relationship with, or, you know, your the basement, you get a leak in your basement, you've got to call the carpet guy to rip up the carpet. You know, tell the damn carpet guy what you're doing for a living, right? Start by taking the interactions that are right in front of you, and there's countless numbers of them. You know, if you have children, you're at the soccer field, you're picking your kids up after school. If you don't have children, you're older, you actually get out of the house and you get to have some social time. You're at a yoga class. You're, you know, you're taking a cooking class. You're grocery shopping. You're at the Rotarians meeting. You're going, you're whatever it is you're doing for pleasure yourself. You're playing football yourself. You're out, you're meeting people. That is a networking opportunity. And so I really do encourage people who are starting out and maybe a little bit, you know, feeling a little cautious about, you know, doing, you know, getting out there, so to speak, is start with everybody you know. Make sure you've told every single person that you can think of what you're up to. And that means telling them things like, hi, you know, I've graduated, right? And I'm so excited because I've decided to help pregnant women, and this is what I'm going to do, and this is how I'm going to help them, and tell them all the really great things. And people will be like, oh, that's amazing, because, you know, Betty Ann down the road, she's pregnant, and she could probably really use your help. Oh, great, can you tell Betty Ann, here's my card, right? It just, it's amazing how people want to help us build our businesses, but they can't help us if we don't tell them what the hell we're doing and ask them for help.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
So I say start with the people you already know and love and people you already work with, your financial planner, your lawyer. Make sure everybody you have a working relationship with already knows what you're up to, and start with all the people. You know, I often recommend, here's a really a great idea that I like to give out. A great way to do it is to send a letter to everyone you can possibly think of and tell them what you're doing. You know, throw in a couple of business cards and say, hey, you know, this is what I'm trying to do. This is what I'm passionate about. And if you know anyone that fits into this description, you know, the people that you really want to work with that you've described in the letter, if you know anyone, I'd really appreciate your help in spreading the word and passing out my cards to those people that you know. Again, you know, your Uncle Joe and Aunt Louise, they want to help you. And so does everyone else, because that's, people inherently want to help. But again, they can't help if they don't know.
You know, there's a whole thing around new people and how to manage expectations as they start out, because they really, people do think, well, I've got all this great education and I'll just tell everybody and they'll start coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really work that way.
No, you know my story, right? Like I told you my story where basically when I graduated, and I graduated, it'll be 11 years this June is when I graduated, and I went out and I spent like $300 on like business cards and getting them all laid out by this graphic designer and, you know, the whole wingy dingy thingy. And I thought, wow, I've got business cards. Like I felt really professional and I was like all feeling all fancy and I had all this sorted out. I spent more on business cards than I made in the first 2 years of business, for God's sakes. I mean, like having, you know, just getting a business card was obviously not enough. Right? Like, what good are they if they sit in a drawer, right? So, yeah, there is a reality. We do have this. I was so naive. I'm embarrassed to tell that story, but I tell it all the time because I want people to recognize that I was ridiculously naive. And frankly, nobody taught me this in school. No one taught me. We had a weekend course in building a business, which was great. I mean, and no disrespect to the gentleman who taught us, and it was a lovely course, but it really wasn't down and dirty, nitty gritty, like what the hell to do when I walk out the door. You know, don't spend $362 on business cards. You know, spend $150 and then go put them out and give them away. Don't sit them in a drawer, you know. Like, I didn't know what to do. I really, you know, had no idea. I had no idea, and I wish someone had said to me, you know, people aren't just going to wander in your door. Some will. I mean, there is truth to that, but not enough to really get you going.
Well, and we often see as members pursue their businesses, we hear about people who are on the brink of changing direction. They're either, you know, either for personal reasons or financial reasons mostly. So can you offer any advice on how they can sort of stick with it and build their confidence and, you know, continue to pursue their passion?
Have you ever heard that story? I always blow these things because I never tell them quite right. But have you ever heard the story about the 3 feet from gold?
No.
Have you ever heard that one? Well, I'm not going to try to tell it all because, like I said, I always bungle them. But the basic premise of the 3 feet from gold story was about this, you know, I don't know, father and son who were digging for gold, whatever, right? And they're digging and they're digging and they're digging. And they get to the point where they basically give up because they're so sick and tired of trying to dig for gold. And they think, well, there's just no way, right? So they abandoned all their tools and all their stuff at the, you know, at the face of the rock or wherever the hell they, wherever you dig for gold. And they walked away. And someone else came along and said, hey, maybe we should dig here for gold. And sure as shit, 3 feet in, there was gold.
Oh.
So, right? It's pretty powerful. It actually, and it's not unlike that whole thing about the slot machines. I don't gamble, but, you know, people say you put all this money in a slot machine and then you walk away and somebody comes and pulls the handle and gets all the money. Right?
Yep,
very
that's
similar.
Mercy,
so
isn't
a
it?
Lot of times, yeah, a lot of times people give up when they're really on the brink of actually breaking through, and I see this a lot. So they're actually so close. They've worked hard. They've put their effort in. It is their passion. They've done it all, and then they're like, oh, my God, I can't possibly do this any longer. You know, it's too much. I can't handle it, and they walk away. So I like to remind people of the 3 feet from gold story, right? If it really is what you're passionate about, then get the help you need to just make the digging easier and faster and far more efficient so that you're just getting to the gold a little quicker ultimately, right? So that's one sort of thing I would offer. The second thing I would offer is that, you know, it takes a bit of a reframe, I think, from a mindset perspective, you know, to sort of say to yourself, well, okay, so this really hasn't been easy. This maybe hasn't been a cakewalk to start my practice, and I thought it would be, but if it's what I really want, you know, you take some reevaluation. Is it what you really want? And if so, then it's so worth sticking with it. It's so worth sticking with it.
Right. Or sometimes you have to sort of redefine what it looks like in order to make yourself very passionate about it.
Absolutely. So that might be a situation where you might become less passionate about your business because all you've been doing is working with men with diabetes and you have no interest in that whatsoever. So one way of redefining is to say, you know what, I'm not freaking working with men with diabetes anymore. I'm going to work with the people I'm most passionate about serving and only them. And only them. Right? That's a great way to reignite your passion. Right? Another great way to reignite your passion is to surround yourself with positive, upbeat, successful people. You know what? Again, I always bungle these stories, but what's that one about? You know, you are the average of the five or six people that you hang around, right? So who are you hanging around with? Are you hanging around with other nutritionists or health and wellness professionals that are sitting in and bemoaning constantly the lack of business coming through their doors? Or are you hanging around with people that are like, holy shit, I'm so busy. You know, my next thought is how am I going to expand? Like, those are the people I want to be around with, right? That's who I surround myself with. I want to be with people who are positive and passionate and are forward-thinking and successfully minded. I don't want to just hang out in a room full of people moaning.
You're really big on collecting and reviewing positive accolades, too, and I love that idea.
Yes, I am.
Yeah,
it's
and
a big
fact,
one for me too.
Yeah, we're considering a program called Sharing Success in which we're hoping our members will share their positive stories. So, you know, just can you talk a little bit about that type of pursuit in framing an overall attitude and approach toward the business?
Absolutely, because I believe it's a fundamental piece. It's a fundamental piece. So, couple of different ways that you can do it. And, you know, I call it, you know, celebrating your success or, you know, whatever you want to call it, right? But I liked collecting accolades. I thought that was really sharp too. Nice turn of phrase
there,
Beth. That was good. So a couple of different ways you can do it. When I first started doing this, I kept a journal and I called it my success journal. And every day I would write down something that happened that sort of supported my success. That was a success story, right? Whether, you know, and really, I'll be really honest, you know, a lot of times success in my business was showing up, right? You know, because from a personal story background, right, I have dealt with a lot of anxiety and depression in my life and post-traumatic stress disorder after a car accident several years ago. So actually just showing up at work was a pretty damn big success, right? Some days that's what I wrote, right? I got dressed and I came to work. That's my success. So it doesn't have to be, you know, something giant like I brought in $20,000 in sales today, although I've had those days too. The point is that whatever it was that happened that day, there's always success there. There's always something to celebrate, always. So even in those bleakest of days, I had a success to write down. So in the beginning, I kept a journal, and then what I would do too is I would, if anybody like sent me a thank you card or they popped me an email or a text message or something, I would copy it out. Or if it was a card, I would cut it or paste it or whatever I needed to do to get it into this journal, and I would keep it. And so then I could reflect and I could look at this journal when I was feeling down or when I was feeling like I wasn't making a difference in the world, be reminded of the real big difference I was making. So I did the journal for a long time, but after that I then created what I call my success box, and that was a really big deal because even the purchasing of the box was a big moment for me, and I'll tell the story and I'll make it short, but the box itself was very, at the time, I considered it to be a very expensive item, right? So you want something beautiful, right? You want something that you're going to look at and going to be proud of. And I bought it specifically as my success box because every time I look at it, it feels very rich and I feel very successful when I look at it and I feel very proud that I bought it and I could pay cash for it. Like, it was a big deal. And so then now I put all my letters and thank you notes and cards that people send me. If they post on Facebook, I will, like, just as a note to how I do that, I will copy and paste it and stick it in a Word document, and then I'll print them off, and I print it on pretty color paper, and I'll put it in the box. And so when I'm having those moments, because it never goes away entirely, we all have days when we're not really sure what the hell we're doing and why we're doing it, and I'm very open and honest about that. I get out my box, and I just start rifling through the cards and the notes, and I read them, and I smile, and I'm, you know, it automatically boosts me up. So that is one way. And another great thing that we do, and we do this, you know, in the some of the group coaching, like I belong personally to a group coaching program, and then I also lead group coaching programs, but it's always a huge part of discussion is around celebrations, right? What can we celebrate? What's really great things have happened? What's your blessings that have occurred? It's just really trying to keep focused on the positive, really great things that are happening.
Great. So then this sharing success thing might be really good for our members to partake in.
I think, Beth, it's a fantastic idea. I think about that and I think, well, why wouldn't you want to celebrate that? And then, you know, Ken, if you're having a bit of a down day, you can look at other people's successes too and you can be like, that will reignite your own passion as well because you're like, but hang on, there's so much great stuff going on. Like, look at how successful, you know, Josephine was yesterday. Look what she did. And she had that client come back who, you know, no longer needs insulin. And isn't that really great? And, you know, it fuels you up. It is very, very, very lonely to be an entrepreneur. It's a very lonely road.
Yeah.
It's very lonely. Not a lot of people understand it. Not a lot of our family members understand it. Depending on your age, you know, and how old you are, a lot of your peers won't really understand it. I mean, let's face it, a lot of my peer group for a lot of years, they had jobs. I mean, my first job was working in the hospital. So here I was going to become an entrepreneur and everybody I knew around me was a unionized employee at the hospital, you know, making great money, working hard. They were in the system. Being self-employed was weird to them. They didn't get it. They don't understand it. You know, they think it's all about tax write-offs. They really have no idea what being self-employed is like. So you really, the importance of community and surrounding yourself with other like-minded, entrepreneurs is huge. So if you can get people into that, Beth, where they are celebrating and sharing their successes in that way, I mean, that automatically just boosts the overall morale of everyone and of the profession as a whole.
Yeah, well, that's our thinking. Two other really specific questions, Rebecca, if you don't mind. One thing we hear from members all the time is, you know, particularly at the beginning, they have a client that comes and they do a really great consultation, and then they can't get the client to come back. Are there any tips you can offer when you're sending
that
client
out
the door? I know.
I'm not going to lie to you. I've always found that the weirdest thing, right? Like, I've had that happen where they'll come for the initial consultation, and sometimes they don't even come to pick up the remedy. I'm like, well, that was really weird. So, like, I think, well, why would you do that? Why would you come for 2 hours and see me and pay money and then just not even show up to pick up the remedy and not follow up at all? It's the most bizarre thing. So I don't do it that way anymore. So this is a bit of a hard concept, so I will try to introduce it gently, but I really would like to introduce it to those who are listening to this. I don't work with people anymore who aren't willing to commit to work with me for a specific amount of time. Okay, now you might be thinking, well, that's easy for her to say. She's 11 years in business. She's busier than hell. I mean, it's true. I have so much. You know, I get so many referrals that I have several referral partners because I can't even take all the phone. You know, I can't take all the patients myself, right? So I have built a huge team down here, right, where we are doing a lot of cross-referring and I have a lot of people coming through the door. So you might think it's easy for me to say this, but I'll tell you that the way that this became the way that it did for me, one of the biggest things I did was start to be very specific with patients when I spoke to them in the beginning. And I wouldn't take them on unless they were willing to commit to work with me for a minimum length of time.
Yeah.
But so that's changed for me over the years, too. So when I first started doing this a few years ago, the whole idea was very foreign within our industry. So it freaked people out a lot, right? And it freaked me out. I was like, what the hell am I doing? But this was on the advice of my coach. And so I invest money for my coach. She knows what the hell she's talking about. So I'm going to do what she tells me to do, right? So I did it. And at first I did, I believe, thinking back, I think my first iteration of the commitment was something like I did like 6 months, 9 months, and 12 months or something like that, or maybe I didn't and started with 3 months even. Might have even started with 3 months when I think back. It's been a while. At the end of the day, it didn't work because, of course, you know and I know you can't really get anywhere in 3 months, right? I mean, you can get some progress and you expect your patients to see change, but it's not going to be lasting change in 3 months. So you need to create a length of time that makes sense, right, where you know that you're setting yourself and your client up for success. Right, 3 months, we were just getting rolling. Would they have seen changes? Sure. But were they positive, lasting changes? No. So then the minimum came 6 months. So it was either a minimum of 6 months or 12 months. Now I don't even offer that. The only thing I'll work with somebody is for a minimum of a year at this point, right? But that's, again, I'm at a bit of a different point, and I'm very selective in who I'll work with, so it's a bit of a different process. So I do believe that, generally speaking, clients want some choice. So I think a 6-month option and a 12-month option is great. And you have that conversation with you, and you explain, right? This is a commitment that I'm making to you and that you need to thus make to me and to the process of getting you where you really want to go. If a potential client has really clear health goals, you need to explain to them that they can't reach those goals in 6 weeks, right? We're not putting them on some miracle, you're not likely putting them on some, you know, crazy drink a shake, eat no food for the next 6 months. I mean, that's not what a registered holistic nutritionist does typically, right? Don't eat anything,
right.
You'll lose weight. Like, we're not talking quick fixes here. We're talking about people's health. Right? They didn't get sick overnight. They didn't gain all that weight overnight. You and I know it's going to take time for them to get better and to correct their hormonal imbalances or whatever the hell else they've got going on. Don't leave them with the false impression that it's a quick fix scenario. It doesn't do anybody any service. And so get them to commit right up front to working with you for a particular length of time. Does that help?
Good. Yes, great. But and related to that question is, of course, we have the added issue of approaching a client which is essentially now and in the foreseeable future, having to pay for our services out of pocket. And so do you have any advice around approaching a client? And I think really part of it is reframing our own mindset around taking, you know, earning the money and the client having a certain level of different commitment having to pay. I think, you know, people coming from an OHIP or, you know, provincially provided healthcare system sort of has skewed that whole concept?
It has, to some degree, and yet I would say that probably I could count on one hand in 11 years how many patients I've actually had that had any sort of benefit covered at all.
Right, that's
one
my
hand.
Point.
Right?
So we need to sort of reframe our own mindset about this.
Got to let go of the bullshit line that you're feeding yourself, which is patients won't come if they have to pay me. That's crap. It's complete crap. That's your own mindset standing in the way. Literally, I can think of maybe five out of thousands of patients I've had, maybe five had insurance coverage, right? It's a non-issue. If you become very clear about the benefit that you provide in your own mind and communicate that very clearly to a potential client, they will pay anything to get that benefit. We're talking about their health. You have to own the power of what it is that you do, the transformation that you can provide. And you need to communicate that to a potential client. And you've got to get them nodding their head and smiling and go, that is exactly what I want. And I need that. And it won't matter how much it costs. I mean, you and I know, we know, somewhere inside of us, and we just have to own it, that without good health care, people die. This is not, we're not talking some namby-pamby thing here. We're talking life and death. We're talking about saving lives. This is what you do, right? Why would you think that your services are any less value than the surgeon at the hospital across the road, right? So stand firm in the value that you provide. Communicate to the client what you provide and clearly charge them an appropriate amount of money. This whole discounts and Groupons and shit like that makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. You got to quit that crap because you devalue the entire industry when you put yourself on sale. It makes us look like we're toasters. We're not commodities. We're healthcare professionals. So you got to step into that, own it, communicate it, and charge the money. People will pay. Believe me, they will. And I've had more than one argument with people about this where they're saying, but no, insurance has to cover it. No, insurance doesn't have to cover it. Insurance doesn't cover the cost of my iPhone or my cable TV. I don't have it, but if I did, that doesn't cover it, right? And look at, I'm paying for that.
And I think part of what you're saying also is that in communicating this, we can't be apologetic about it. I think that that's a big mistake, particularly people that are new to the industry. You know, they say, I can do all these great things, but I'm really sorry you're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah, I'm really sorry, but that'll be $100.
Yeah.
You know, well, guess
what? Can we work something out?
Yeah, exactly. Then there's the classic, there's the barter crap, too, that happens, right? No, you've got to really, if you can't see the value in what you do, you might as well close up shop right now. You can even press stop on this recording because the day is done. You might as well go and get a job working at the Ford plant screwing widgets. If you don't believe in the value of what you do, you're done. You're done. That's the bottom. That's it. Period. The end. There is no way out of that. So it's up to you as a practitioner to stand up and stand firm and recognize the value of what you provide. That's
right.
The bottom line of it.
Well, that's good information for our members to hear for sure. Is there anything else, Rebecca, that I haven't kind of touched upon that you think we should or you'd like to make sure our members know about?
Well, I think it's important. I mean, I will say I like to kind of get across the sort of thing that, you know, people often ask me, well, what were the most important things you ever did that sort of turned your business around? Because like I said, there was years where I just had really nice business cards and I made no money. So the three most important things that I did that really changed everything for me One was I got some help with some administrative stuff in my office. So at the time, I hired a virtual assistant. I have an in-house assistant now, and then I have a virtual team too. But at the time, I hired what's called a virtual assistant. So that's somebody that doesn't actually work in the office with you, but works online and you communicate via telephone and email, for her to take over some of the administrative tasks that I did. That was really important because I didn't have enough experience, and I was wasting a lot of valuable time trying to figure things out, like a MailChimp program. At the time, we were using Constant Contact. You know, I was writing my own newsletters. I was, you know, trying to figure out how to work the technology. It was just, it was a mess. I was wasting a lot of time. And I was wasting a lot of time, you know, arranging client appointments, when really that's something somebody else can do. You know, they can return those phone calls. So it's important sometimes to look at what it is that you're doing and where you're wasting time, and hire somebody to do that. And I know exactly what people think when I say that, which is, how can I possibly afford to hire somebody? But I will tell you, again, my story there is that when I hired Tracy to start working with me, I remember we agreed at like a maximum of 3 hours a month, and that was going to cost me $105 or whatever it was. And I absolutely was panicked about how I was going to pay her $100 a month. But the thing is that there never was a month that I wasn't able to pay her, right? Because the value of what she did for me was huge, right? Because she did the things that I was wasting time with, so I could actually do what I was really good at. So that's one key. The second key, and you'd find this especially funny if you knew the woman, but the other thing I did is I rented a room in a healthcare clinic with a woman that kind of scared me a little bit, because she was very successful. She was very professional. She's in the industry for like 20 some odd years. She'd been a nurse before that and then was into natural health care. She knew what she had going on. She knew her own value. She knew her own worth. She was confident. She was solid and secure in her business. And it scared me because, you know, I say it scared me because I knew that's what I wanted, but I didn't know how to get that. But I knew that there was something about it, and I wanted a piece of that. So I surrounded myself, literally shared an office with her, so that I could start standing up with that, you know, kind of mimic, and she became a mentor to me, right? And then the third thing that I did is I hired a business coach, and that changed everything too, because then I knew what to do, and I wasn't just scrambling. At that point, I'd pissed away, and I don't mind telling everyone because it's the story. I'd spent over $10,000 on marketing efforts that I'd wasted money. I wasn't making any money. I had these really fancy business cards. I didn't know what I was doing. I'd wasted a ton of money and a ton of time, years. I'd graduated 5 years prior. I had no money. I had nothing going on. And I had a lot of debt and a lot of no patients coming in the door. So I got a mentor. I got somebody, you know, in my corner that could tell me exactly what to do, make it efficient, and help me build a business. So those are the three critical points. So I would say to keep those in mind too, on top of everything else we've discussed today. Those were the three big turning point things that I did. I did them all at once, and it changed everything.
Well, I think that's an ideal segue for you to put a little plug in for your coaching business.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so, I mean, that's why I started doing what I'm doing, right, with the business coaching, is that it was when you said earlier in the interview, Beth, and you said, you know, what would you say to people who are, you know, just ready to pack it in? I got so discouraged and upset from watching colleagues of mine quit running their businesses or go back to working at the 7-Eleven or never really got the business off the ground. And I realized that our healthcare system and as a whole was going to suffer tremendously if none of the people in natural medicine can make a go of it. Then where does anybody have a choice, right, in their form of medicine that they pick? So, you know, it smacks of an entire industry going to pot, and then the people don't have access to healthcare if we're all working at 7-Eleven pumping gas, right? So I started training to do business coaching, and I'd already been through the process, so I know what it is because I've done it all myself, and then now I just keep learning new techniques to sort of help people. And I have several group coaching programs. I do one-on-one business coaching for those who don't really like group work, and I also offer an online course called RX90. It's your 90-day prescription for making your practice profitable, and you can do that. You know, we do a lot of distance coaching work too, but it's something that you can work away at on your own as well. So there's lots of options for people to work with me. The easiest thing, really, for anyone who's interested in pursuing working with me as a business coach is just to visit the website, which is makingyourpracticeprofitable.com. And there's a little icon there with a little blue speech bubble, and it just says, you know, click here to chat, arrange a time to call, and you can click there, and it will lead you to my online calendar. You can book it's a complimentary, it's a 30-minute consultation. We can chat about where you're at, and I can review with you some options to how to get you moving in a positive direction.
That is just the greatest news.
Well, I hope it's been helpful.
I think so. I think it's been really great. I really appreciate
your time.
Okay,
and
thanks,
I appreciate
Rebecca.
Yours.
Have a great
thanks.
Day.
Thank you, Beth. Bye for now.
Bye.